We are welcoming a new show to iHeart and the DraftKings YouTube channel. It is called Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano. It is an insider look at the NBA and the coaches surrounding the league. Every week, the five-time All-Star and the number one pick in the 2010 NBA Draft, John Wall, will give his unique perspective on hot topics in the league and tell the best behind-the-scenes stories from his time in the NBA. So check out Point Game with John Wall and CJ Toledano on the iHeartRadio app, the DraftKings YouTube channel, or wherever you listen to podcasts.
Black Tech Green Money isn't just about telling the stories of successful black entrepreneurs. It's also about giving actionable and wealth-building strategies that help you protect the future of our communities. That's why we're pleased to be supported by State Farm Insurance. State Farm also believes that we must invest in our communities to achieve economic growth by sponsoring programs like the AXO, which rewards high school students for their academic achievements. State Farm believes that being better neighbors creates better communities. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there.
Hey, everyone. It's our favorite time of the year here at The Black Effect. We're heading to Atlanta for the 2024 Black Effect Podcast Festival, and we're not going alone. Nissan is back as our partner, and they're continuing their Pitch Your Podcast Lounge at the festival, where you'll have the opportunity to pitch your podcast idea live and share it with the Black Effect team. So get those podcast ideas ready. And remember, you can count on Nissan to dial up the thrill in your adventures, no matter where life takes you. Visit blackeffect.com/podcastfestival for more details.
AT&T connects an ode to podcasts. Connect the alarm. Change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze. 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower. Lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work in traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories. Change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
I bet you're smart.
Yeah, and you like to hold your own in the group chat.
We can help you drop even more knowledge. My name is Martine Powers.
And I'm Elahe Izadi. We host a daily news podcast called Post Reports.
Every weekday afternoon, Post Reports takes you inside an important and interesting story with the kind of reporting that you can only get from The Washington Post.
You can listen to Post Reports wherever you get your podcasts. Go find it now and hit follow.
Morning, everybody. It's DJ Envy, Charlamagne Tha God. We are the Breakfast Club. We got a special guest in the building.
Yes, we do.
T.I.
Yo.
This is a monumentous occasion. Because August 19th, 2003, the South and hip-hop shifted forever.
Indubitably.
When trap music came out. Yeah. 20 years of trap music. God damn, we that old?
Hip-hop is 50 and trap music is 20.
Lord have mercy.
Wow.
Yeah. How did that feel, man?
Feel like a lot of hard work paying off, you know? And also, I think it feel like a lot of stories and experiences and lessons that were shared by so many people, you know what I'm saying? Like, you know, you have to be relatable to sustain for so long. Mm-hmm. So I mean, I'm just happy to be able to speak for people who needed to be spoken for.
When did you get the deal, right? Because this trap music was actually your second album.
I'm serious, was the first album. Right?
You was on the Face, then you went to Atlantic. Mm-hmm. When did you actually sign the deal?
Which deal?
To go to Atlantic to put out trap music. Because I'm asking that because I remember you coming to Columbia, South Carolina, Big DM, 101.3. I might have been doing 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. And it was you and C-Rod.
Yep.
And you had on a gray champion hoodie and you had white labels on 20. You had 24 on a white label CD.
Yeah, yeah.
And I remember playing it off the CD like, man, it's hard.
Yeah.
But I don't think I think you was in between deals at that point.
I believe so, man. I think that was 2002.
Yep.
So I think I probably would have been working independently 2002 and going into the deal with Atlantic like 2003. Yeah.
Did they get it?
Well, Atlantic?
Did they understand what you were trying to do?
I mean, absolutely. I think the beauty of it is when we actually came into contact with Atlantic, we already had motion. Mm-hmm. Like we were already kind of moving around as you just described. Getting our records played. We had, you know, mixtapes that we were pushing around, circulating through the communities. And we was, you know, we was on the road, you know, working, doing shows consistently, like three two to three times a week. Mm-hmm. So I think it was a no brainer by then.
Now talk about how it changed Atlanta music, changed music around the world. Talk about that. Was that the mindset and why?
Well, I can't necessarily say we went into it with the, you know, with the definite intention of such. I think, okay, so when the first album dropped, I feel like what that did for us, it allowed us to collect data. You know what I mean? Because, okay, so LaFace was dissolved, mm-hmm. And L.A., he came up here to New York and took a seat as the president of Arista. Mm-hmm. That left us at Atlanta, in Atlanta, you know, kind of like, okay, what we do now? But what we realized was they still left some, you know, a lot of resources and assets for us to use. So we went to the storage unit, got all those promotional use only CDs. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. We had about 20 boxes of those and all of the snipes and the, you know, the posters and the stickers and stuff. Took them, got in the car, got on the road, flooded the AUC with them, FAMU. You know what I'm saying? Going to Birmingham, Montgomery, Columbia, South Carolina, Tennessee, you know what I mean? And what we found was everybody who heard it liked it. Mm-hmm. Everyone who heard I'm Serious fell in love with it. We just had to get more people to hear it. Mm-hmm. So what I would do is go to the mall on Saturday, go to the clubs, go to the college campuses, and I know it said promotional use only, but we were selling them. Mm-hmm. And and so the deal was, I had a little motto. I said, hey, listen, man, I'm going to sit here with you and listen to it. And if you don't like it, I'm going to give you your money back. So we'll roll one up, smoke. By the time we get through about the second one, they're like, oh, yeah, you hard. And I never had to get nobody money back. So we went through all those, you know, those hand-to-hand, mm-hmm. FaceTime kind of acts. And the data we received was the three songs that people responded to the most.
Oh, let me name them.
Still, okay, go ahead.
Dope Boys in the Trap. Mm. Do It Baby, Stick It Baby.
That was probably a close four.
That was one in the club. Do It Baby, Stick It Baby, and Panty Popper. Panty Popper number one.
You got two out of three.
Okay, what's the third one?
Still Ain't Forgave Myself.
Still Ain't Forgave Myself. Oh.
Dope Boys in the Trap. Yeah. And Panty Pumper number one. Do It Baby was probably a close fourth. Mm-hmm. But so we learned that was like, you know, that was the vibes that they were responding to. That's what people were gravitating to on the album. So I, with that information, I said, okay, well, I could do a whole album worth of this and call it trap music. Mm-hmm. And so going into that next album, that's what we did.
Oh, that makes sense. So so something like Still Ain't Forgave Myself spawned what records for trap music?
I Still Love You.
I Still Love You. Okay.
Yeah.
That makes sense. That makes all the sense in the world. All right. So after I'm Serious, what do you think went wrong with I'm Serious, if anything?
I think it was I dropped within a transitional period, mm-hmm. I believe. You know, LaFace was a institution of culture, like a real a musician's university. Mm-hmm. So, and it was in Atlanta, you know what I mean? So it was real boutique. You know, you could go in there and have a conversation with LA about needing more money for your budget on a video, needing to get, you know, more spins on your record. Mm-hmm. You know, just things that artists need to communicate with, mm-hmm. their label about on a regular. You could actually go in there and talk straight to the decision maker, you know, without any interference or no red tape. Mm-hmm. And when that transition happened and everything was in New York now, that was, you know, a bit more of a commute. Mm-hmm. And I'm sure L.A. was in a position where, you know, he went from being the boss and really answering to no one to now he's in a position where he got to put up numbers and answer to people, you know, to justify his position. Mm-hmm. And so the first thing he looking to do is, I'm sure, go to the guaranteed hit makers that he already had. Mm-hmm. I think Outkast was on deck, Tony Braxton, Usher, sure. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, you know, this new kid, you know, yeah, it's cool. Yeah, sure. And let's get to the numbers. And I understand that, you know, at the time, not so much, but I appreciate that, because the lesson I took from it, you know, we had it gone the way we anticipated, mm-hmm. the way we wanted to, I don't think we would have, you know, been the businessmen and gained the independence that we did.
That was it really difficult because at that time, I know New York was heavy, right? That's when DMX was out at that time.
Sure.
I think Ja Rule, 50, the whole...
50 was smoking.
Was 50 smoking in 2001? When
That's when all the G-Unit mixtapes and stuff came out. The album came out 02.
But Rockefeller was real big at that time. Was that very difficult to break in during that time?
No, I don't think so. I think the South's advantage was always we could do numbers only just in the South. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Of course, what we needed, you know, what we needed to broaden our reach to New York for was more like visibility. But once you became known and sought after in the South, and then the Midwest right there. Mm-hmm. So, you know, you got artists like, you know, Ghetto Boys, UGK, you know what I mean? Like 8-Ball, MJG, mm-hmm. you know, certain people that just did numbers only focusing on the South. So I never felt, you know, that it would have been difficult to really make a dent. I just knew, you know, in order to kind of like, you know, get MTV or get covers of The Source or, you know what I'm saying, stuff like that. That's what we kind of needed New York for.
And what made you do that? Because back then, doing the clubs in New York, a lot of Southern artists you wouldn't see. Like a lot of those artists that you just named, I've never seen in the club, but I would see you in the club.
Right.
Years later, I would see like your Jeezy's in the club, but what made you say, nah, I got to attack everywhere and attack every club and attack every street?
Well, I never really made a conscious effort to do anything. I just went and reached the people wherever we was at. You know what I mean? Like, if we had meetings in New York and there's a club going on in New York, but I have a familiarity with the city. I got a dual citizenship. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? So, I mean, you know, I come up here and move around, you know, effortlessly. I wasn't really tripping off of it.
Because your father from here, right?
Well, he moved here, you know what I mean? He's from Atlanta, but he moved here when he was like 20, in the 50s. Mm-hmm. Yeah, and he had been up here all my life until he passed.
You know, man, the reason I love this conversation, because, you know, the older we get, we really got to start preserving culture and start really putting the proper narratives out there. Mm-hmm. Trap music is so important, and it's one of the reasons I got you on the Mount Rushmore of the South, period, because there was no... People was using the term trap, but not to say this is trap music before trap music. When it comes to people like, you know, Drama and just the way even Jeezy did the mixtape thing, you did that prior, you know?
I laid some fundamental work.
Yeah, In the Streets, you know, volume 1 through 3.
Yeah.
You know? And there is no Jeezy, there's no Gucci, there's no Future, there's not that shift in Atlanta sound without T.I. and trap music. And I think that needs to be stated.
That's, you know, I'm humbled by that. I'm humbled by that. I mean, I think, man, you know, everybody plays a part and has a position. And I just did my part, you know what I'm saying? I had no idea that what I was doing would mean so much to so many, or so many people would be able to relate and correspond with their own contributions that would reach the masses and turn into what it's turned into today. It's just a blessing to be, you know, to be a piece of such a magnificent machine.
Do you think you're the first to do what we know as trap music, or the first to label it as trap music?
I mean, well, definitely the first to label it as trap music. And of course, we've all heard, you know, songs about drugs and drug dealers, but you know, with the extra special attention to the details of the nuances, I think, you know, that's kind of, I give you an example. You've heard records about rappers rapping about being hitmen or carrying out homicides or so on and so forth. But we have never heard like the attention to detail of the nuances the way we did when Scarface said, "Never seen a man cry till I seen a man die." Right. Like that, like getting into, like, you know, going scratching beneath the surface and you know, lifting up layers to find out like what's in the heart and the mindset and you know, what level of consciousness are these people on when they making these decisions, and how does it affect them and their families? You know what I'm saying? Like, all of those things, I don't think, you know, with the extra special attention to detail, I don't think it has been kind of presented that way.
I was going to ask, you know, why did you see it so as important to make sure people knew about it, right? Because, you know, 50 Years of Hip Hop was a couple of days ago. And there's so many people that don't know about hip hop, how it was created, where it was created, or anything like that, how the first sound, the first group to go platinum, and the first group to be on the top 40. But you thought about this years ago, which is probably why you created the Trap Museum, where people can actually see the history of what it is and they can actually know the knowledge. Why did you see that so early for people to make sure they have that knowledge, they understand it, they know?
I mean, well, a few things. So, one, we were my man Mano. Hey, for what we was brainstorming and collaborating on ideas of how to celebrate the 15th year anniversary of Trap Music. And you know, we wanted to do something different, not just a show we perform and this, that, and the other. We wanted to really, really commemorate it with something substantial. And one of the you know, one of the over-the-top ambitious ideas in the room was a museum, a trap music museum. And I love the name. It just has sort of a ring to it. But I couldn't wrap my mind around, because when I'm thinking of museum, I'm thinking of Smithsonian.
Correct. Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, I'm thinking something a lot more grandiose. And then I started looking at other types of museums. You know, they had these pop-up museums that, you know, they might just go to a storefront and do a pop-up museum. Mm-hmm. And so at that point, simultaneously, I was also acquiring commercial real estate in the city. So I just bought this building. I didn't know what to do with it. I was going, it was so I bought it because it was so close to the stadium, the Mercedes-Benz Dome, and the Super Bowl was coming. And I figured, okay, we could use this building, probably lease it out to ESPN, Fox Sports, NFL, something like that, get some quick money. But then as I started walking around, and I was like, nah, you know what? This could be a museum. And, you know, I think that's kind of when it came to life. When I heard the idea and I dismissed it, I was like, ah, that'll never happen. Then I walked in the building after I had just bought it, and the idea was just in my head, and I was walking around kind of envisioning, okay, yeah, we could. And I think that's, and also, it was around the time where there was a lot of questions and a lot of, you know, speculation floating around in the air about who did and didn't, you know, have, you know, a hand in creating trap music, who was and wasn't responsible. So I felt like it was a teachable moment. And, you know, ain't nothing like, hey, only a fool disputes facts.
That's another thing you was early on, real estate. It was a new finish, right? And I just know that from hearing it in your raps. And I remember it was something you did on MTV one time when you were showing people
all the... them around and showed the houses and whatnot.
How did you know that you wanted to invest in Atlanta way back then?
Man, to be honest, man, in Atlanta, you know, the one thing that we have, I feel like, that probably sets us apart from a lot of cities is examples of entrepreneurship in our communities. Not just famous people, not just rich people, but we have examples of entrepreneurship and how to take funds. Instead of, most people say, okay, you put this much in your checking, this much in your savings, and well, the money they're supposed to go into savings, we go put in, we buy a house and flip that house and take the profits and do some more stuff with it. And you know what I mean? And, you know, we learn from people like Q-Ball. We learn from people like Cherry, my pops, his brothers, my uncles, you know, Derek Dials. There's so many people in the community that, you know, just laid the fundamental groundwork of what to do when you get the money. You know what I mean? When I first got my piece of paper, my first piece of paper, my uncle, he was getting out of prison, and you know, he just hit me up for $40,000. I ain't have but 60, you know, but he was just coming home, and you know, I didn't even think about it. I gave it to him.
Just gave it to him to give it, or he was going to invest in his own?
Well, he just asked for it.
Eh.
He didn't tell, he just asked, so I gave it to him, and I went and took the rest and did what I needed to do for myself. And then, like, I say maybe 4 to 6 months later, he took me to a house I used to sell dope out of. And, you know, I looked at it. I was like, damn, they got off the dope. And he was like, man, nah, they ain't in there no more. I bought that house with that money you gave me. And this is what we did. You know what I mean? We renovated it, sold it. Now it's a family living in there. Mm-hmm. And it made me feel good. And he said, well, now I can give you your money back. And I reached for it. He said, or we can get another house, you know. And he said, I might be able to get 2 houses now. So we got 2 houses after that. And then we started doing duplexes, triplexes. And before you know it, we had them built 100 houses.
Wow. Damn.
Yeah, wow. Before the crash of the market. The thing is, though, after I seen that house, you know, it was renovated and the family was in there, came back maybe... I guess maybe 10 to 16 months later and the house was back, dilapidated, ran down again. Mm-hmm. I say, man, we gonna have to work faster than this. So, I mean, that's, you know, that's what got me into commercial real estate, multifamilies, and so on and so forth.
Is it hard to celebrate the 20th anniversary of trap music without having two pillars around you, like Phil and like Clay?
I mean, it's hard not to celebrate it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? Because, you know, all the work we put in and everything that we hustle for and fought for, you know, is commemorated with the celebration of trap music.
Mm-hmm.
They'll be memorialized with the celebration.
Mm-hmm. Let's go through some of the songs, man. I just want to know, when I say these songs, I want to know what you think from the album. I Can't Quit. What was your mind state when you recorded that?
I wrote that song. I think I wrote that song like around the time that I left left Arista. You know what I mean? And you know, I was really, you know, just speaking to myself. You know what mm-hmm. I mean? Sometimes, you know, bravado was just self reassurance. You dig? So I was just putting all the proper energy in my self talk. You dig? Mm-hmm. And I think it was delivered as a masterful message.
About no more talk.
No more talk. Well, that I think, man, if I'm not mistaken, there was a lot of I was watching some conspiracy documentaries and reading. I was also reading Behold the Pale Horse at the time.
Oh, yeah.
And you know what I'm saying? I was, you know, just sharing some knowledge that I gathered for myself.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a dope-ass beat, you know what I mean?
What's your favorite song on trap music?
Man, it's hard to pick favorites. I say at the very top of the list, though, would have to be Just Doing My Job.
Doing My Job. What was your mind state when you was doing that one?
Man, Kanye.
Yeah, I want to break down because you got a lot of producers on that. Kanye produced that one, of course.
Kanye,
you got a lot of classics on that. That's why I keep telling y'all stop playing with him when y'all be mentioning these New York artists in the verses against Tip. Okay, Tip will embarrass a lot of these people.
We haven't talked
badly
about the verses. We talked about him in Boston, but we just said that didn't fit.
I'm just saying, but go ahead.
I mean, I went to the show last night.
Did you go to the show last night?
Boston 50. Yeah, it was dope. Yeah. But I think that the mind state with Just Doing My Job, so he already had the beat with the hook playing.
Mm-hmm.
And Just Doing My Job, to me, it immediately took me back to when I was trapping in apartments, me and my partners. Like, none of us live in these apartments. We had just come here to conduct our business.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of the tenants of the apartments, you know, a lot of them were very cool with us, you know, majority, but you had about 4 or 5 that'll walk by and they'll just look at us like with a side eye, we'll speak, they wouldn't speak back, you know what I mean? And they just had a disdain for us. And, you know, I kind of could understand, but at the same time, I was like, you know, if you just really got to know, you know, any of us and had a conversation, you would probably realize that we ain't no different from your nephews or your brother, your mm-hmm. little brothers or sons and so on and so forth. We just find ourselves in extremely dire circumstances. And, you know, all we trying to do is find a way out. Mm-hmm. And I never got a chance to have that conversation.
Mm-hmm.
And I felt like there were other people in my position that probably felt the same way, and they would probably, you know, benefit from the conversation as well. And the beat felt perfect, you know, for the delivery of dialogue.
How was it working with a young Kanye back then?
Kanye was cool as hell, man. I ain't even gonna cap. Kanye was, how can I say? Like, he was more conversational.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like he read the room a lot better. You
yeah,
know,
yeah, yeah.
It feel mm-hmm. like Ye, you know, it feel like Ye, you know, he got to a point where he just stopped reading the room and just gave everything everywhere. You know mm-hmm. what I mean? But he was very excited. That was the first time he played like Through the Wire and Jesus Walks and mm-hmm. All Falls Down. So he played all those records for us. And he was just so excited playing it, like, oh, now this one we gonna do with this one, mm-hmm. and you know, and I'm listening, and when I heard Jesus Walk, I say, man, he gonna do very well or extremely bad.
Why? Because of the religious aspect to it?
Yeah. And obviously the former rather than the latter. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I just felt like, you know, man, religion and corporations don't tend to mix,
mm-hmm. right?
Mm-hmm. But. You know, he put his mix on it and it went there. That's also we took Kanye to Body Tap.
Lord have mercy. Mm.
We took Kanye to Body Tap, man, and
he lost his mind?
He ain't never seen nothing like it. He ain't never seen nothing like it.
I was gonna ask with all those producers with Toomp and David Banner.
Yeah.
Break down Jazzy Faye, break down some working with some of those producers at that time.
But DJ Toomp, man, that's, you know, That's my
mentor. That's your Dr. Dre.
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah.
Dr. Dre to your Snoop.
That's definitely my mentor. And you know, most of the beats that I got from Toomp, I got from him out of they came straight out of hell. Cause Toomp used to cut my hair. And so I go get a haircut and he'll be having beats playing that.
That's the best way to do it. You stuck in the chair for an hour, you're gonna listen to these beats for the next hour.
Well, nah, he wasn't really playing the beats for me.
Oh.
You know, he was making beats. And you know, like, you know, he would be working on a beat. I come to the door, he'll come answer the door, the beat still playing. And while he cutting my hair, you know, the beat just still playing.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, I remember that's how I heard 24 and Be Easy too. And you know, I was like, hey man, what's that? And he'll say, man, that ain't finished. I said, yeah, they'll get it to me.
Mm-hmm.
And I take it and, you know, I whip it up the next day and it, you know, the rest was history.
You know what? You put your flag down too on that album as the King of the South.
Yeah, that was on the first album, actually. Actually, the first time I even mentioned or made mention of the moniker was the song with me and Beanie Siegel, Two Glock Nines on the Shaft soundtrack.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and you know, it wasn't as personal to me. It didn't mean anything for real.
Mm-hmm.
Until people started saying I couldn't say it.
Mm.
Yeah.
But yeah, you know, that's...
But nobody had said it before.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. So it's like nobody ever laid claim to this beautiful region.
That's
you
right.
You know what mm-hmm. I mean? That we call the South.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? That's what brought about the epiphany that came was when I was listening to, I believe, Mystical's album.
Mm-hmm.
He used to call himself the Prince of the South.
Yep.
So I looked at KP, I say, if he's the Prince, who's the King?
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, we just had like that, a silence as we both were thinking. Then we both looked at each other and he said, I bet you won't. I said, the hell I won't.
Was there a debate in the studio about who actually was at the moment?
Mm-mm. It was a debate about who would actually have a problem with it being said.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? But nah.
Did you know everybody was going to have a problem with it at one time?
Yeah.
Oh, you knew it.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, you know, I mean, that intrigued me. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying? Because I always felt like, well, first of all, in my heart of hearts, I just didn't want it to be somebody that I really respected. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. I didn't want to offend
Scarface.
Yeah, you know, Outkast, mm-hmm. Goody Mob, UGK, mm-hmm. A-Ball, MJG, you know, Luke and Tulak. I didn't want to like offend people who I actually had an affinity for. Mm-hmm. But anybody in my class, I wanted all the smoke, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I had conversations with, you know, my predecessors. Mm-hmm. You know, I spoke to Big and Dre from Outkast. I spoke to Face. I spoke to Bun. I spoke to Ball and G. You know what I mean? Everybody who I had access to, I spoke to them. And, you know, and all the OGs told me the same thing. Man, do that shit. Now, you know, I think Dre said something like, what does it really mean to be king? You know, Face was like, man, I don't want to be king. You can have that shit, bro. And Big said, well, you know now, it sounds like some cool shit to say, but to be king, put a bullseye on you. You know, the object of the game of chess is to kill the king, mm-hmm. which is where I got the title for my last album, by mm-hmm. the way. And he said, you can't be looking for no favors. I said, well, but you ain't got a problem with it, though, right? And shit, I went on, did my thing from there. That was all I needed.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And also too, you had the song T.I. versus T.I.P. on that album, which is, you know, that's like a lot of, foreboding? No, not foreboding. Come on, you the vocabulary guy. What's the word?
I don't know what you're trying to describe.
Yeah, we don't even know where you're going. Foreboding.
You came out with an album later called T.I. versus T.I.P.
Foreshadowing?
Foreshadowing.
Prophecy.
There you go. Yeah.
What the hell is foreboding?
I don't know, man.
I didn't know what the
hell. You get around T.I. and you start putting out words.
I thought he was talking about motorboating. Yeah, I know. Where you going? Floorboating. I'm going to let you figure it out, bro.
But you knew back then there was a duality.
Yeah, man. Well, to be honest with you, there was a conflicting nature in the world I was leaving and the world I was entering, mm-hmm. and what I had learned and how I had learned to carry myself and treat situations in the world I was exiting, and the way I had to learn to carry myself in the world I was entering. So a lot of times those things contrasted, and a lot of times they were conflicting, and a lot of times I was torn, you know what mm-hmm. I'm saying? A lot of times, you know, there's some things that I would have to do coming into this world, and I feel like, man, this is the exact opposite of what I learned, you know, in my teachings. Mm-hmm. But I caught on fast that the things I was taught, mm-hmm. I had acquired, you know, sets of skills that I would no longer be able to use, mm-hmm. you know what I mean? And so that calls for a duality or a juxtaposition, mm-hmm. That I think that that narrative, it makes for great conversation, mm-hmm. and great dialogue in music.
I don't feel like you learned that lesson around trap music, though. It took a while for it to really...
That's the beginning of the lesson.
Okay. Got you.
Yeah.
Got you. How's the stand-up comedy going, man?
It's going good, man. It's going good. You know, we're selling that. We just sold that, I think it's Jacksonville Comedy Zone for, 2, 4, 6 shows. Mm-hmm. We're going to Helium in Philly. Mm-hmm. Gonna be in Philly doing some more comedy. We got offers for tours.
You did Comic View, right?
Did Comic View.
Yeah,
in Vegas. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm enjoying it, bro. Mm-hmm. It's a high level of peace. It ain't the same doing it without Clay, but it's still dope. Mm-hmm.
Have you dealt with that, with the loss of Clay?
What you mean?
Just in. Like, as far as grieving, like.
Well, I mean, the question becomes, like, you know, when do you really completely finish grieving?
Yeah. Yeah, especially with somebody like that who's
Yeah, you had day-to-day interaction. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like, when do you really, like, when do you say it's over? When do you say, okay, it's complete? I feel like that's an ongoing process.
Mm-hmm. Because, like, you probably reach for your phone, probably certain things pop up. Like, man, somebody called Clay, and you're like, oh, shit.
Yeah, I've done that several times.
Damn.
You know, but you just try to remember as much as you learn from that person, remember as many memories as you can of time shared with that person, and remember the things that you all intended to do together, and you got to be very intentional about carrying those things. Mm-hmm. One of the things, so you know, Clay and I, we out, man, all of us, but he and I, especially, we had a pact, and it was whoever died first, they would get in front of the church over the casket and say the upper room. and that's what I did. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? And I think,
how did that go over? Because I saw everybody in the circle knew and laughed.
Yeah,
like the rest of the church was like, what?
Mm-hmm. That's right. But nah, man, I think, you know, but that's how we was, man. You know, our sense of humor, we kind of laughed our way. I remember, like, when Phil when they just announced he had passed, and, you know, me and Clay, you know, we was joking, you know, we was, like, laughing about, you know, just how he, you know, he was... He was probably looking at us right now. You know what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. Now, I think we would say, yeah, he probably in the room right now. You better not cry. You better not cry, straighten up.
Mm-hmm.
And we started laughing. And I think once you have experienced so many tragic moments, you know, you got to find some humor to deliver yourself some form of peace.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we always did. So, you know, in his honor, we're going to continue to do that.
I was wondering if the PSC collective, I guess you call it a reunion. I was wondering if y'all coming together to do a new album. I was wondering if that was because of Clay's passing, or were y'all working on that before?
Nah, man. It was really, man, to be honest with you, bro, DJ Holiday, man.
Salute to Holiday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, DJ Holiday came to me, and he asked me about doing a PSC show to commemorate an anniversary of 25 to Life.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I was like, man, I don't think nobody want to do it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I see. Then I started, you know, I just kind of put it in the group chat that we got. And, you know, just slowly everybody just started saying, well, I don't know, you know, we'll see, perhaps. And then it came around like that, you know, Dro had really, really like, did a transformation of himself, and that made everyone feel good. Everybody was proud of that, and I think that probably was the key component that made everybody say, you know what,
let's
try this again.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's been going well. You know, we got a lot of dope music. Everything is everything coming together.
Y'all gonna put out an In the Streets, or it's gonna be an album?
I think so. Drummer said he wanted to do a Gangsta Grill, so I believe it. I think it would be an In the Streets.
That makes sense.
Now, how are you with your sons doing music?
Yeah.
Do they want to hear Dad's Game, or do they just want to figure it out on their own?
I mean, man, it's different decisions for different situations.
Mm.
I think they listen to me, but they may not put it into action immediately. Mm-hmm. You know, I think they still stubbornly try it their way.
Just like Daddy.
Well, I ain't had nobody telling me nothing. You know what I'm saying? That was a little different.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think anybody that was around me, especially at their age, could show me how to do what I was trying to do.
Mm-hmm.
But I probably wouldn't have listened anyway.
I feel like if a song like Be Better Than Me, that was for them even back then.
I think that they do the best they can, and I think they get better at it as the years go on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because I listen to the money, some of his songs, things that I had told him, I thought he wasn't listening at all. And I hear
it in the music.
Yeah, I hear it in the music. And I, you know, that puts me at peace, let me know, okay, so he can hear.
Right.
You know.
We had Boosie up here, and he said that you guys spoke. We were grateful for that. You guys been partners for a long time.
Yeah, we spoke, man. We spoke. I mean, man, to be honest with you, bro, I don't take much personal. You know what I mean? I don't really take a whole lot personal, and I think that's the reason why, you know, like, a lot of stuff just ain't important to me. You dig? Like, in the moment, if I consume myself with it, you know, I have some momentary reaction, but, like, when I really, like, just, how can I say, when I meditate on it and, like, really, really get off the phone and get into my real life, it dissipates. It don't have any true value at all, you know, and there are no stakes, you know what I'm saying? There is no consequence, so it shouldn't really be no emotion behind it. However, you know, once we did talk and I shared with him, you know what I'm saying, with the validity of the facts, you know, I think he kinda reached his own conclusion. And, you know, that was really enough for me. I wasn't tripping off of it. You know what I mean?
I feel like you've disconnected from the social media the way you were.
Yeah.
Is that intentional?
A semi. So my phone broke, man. My phone broke and I was without a phone for about, you know, 2.5, 3. Okay, so first my phone broke and, you know, if your phone break like around, it broke like 6:30. So it wasn't no phone.
No stores open. Right.
So I had to wait. And then the next day I had to go to Canada. So I couldn't get a phone in. And I believe then I had a phone, but I had to go to Anguilla. So I had a new phone, but I needed my old phone to get the chip out of it. So I had like 2 weeks without a phone.
And you liked it?
Yeah. By the time I got back, I had a phone. Then I seen, like, you know what I'm saying? This is my new phone. When I go to Instagram, it don't.
Oh, got you.
So I got to go through the trouble of fixing it and getting in it. And I ain't going to do that. So I'm just, you know, I'm just living with what's around me at the time.
I love me some damn Anguilla, man.
Yeah. Oh, they told me I stayed right there where you stayed.
You know what else is crazy?
Yeah.
When was this?
This was July 14th through the 20th.
Oh, this year?
Yeah.
Oh, I just left.
I know, I told you that.
I left on the 10th.
He just said it 3 times. Yeah. Man. You listening?
You know what's crazy, though? Also this year, I was in St. Lucia. And then one of the car services me and my wife got in, it said Grand Hustle on the back. Yeah. And I said, man, Tip would love this. He said, I just dropped him off.
Yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
What? Or the day before?
We island hopping. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. But the spot you stayed at, man, it was already gone. I had to get the one behind you.
Man, let's buy it.
Let's do it.
I'm dead serious. Right. You know it's for sale.
No, I didn't. They didn't share that with me.
I want it. I just need somebody to do it with me.
You want to buy? You talking about the one that you was in?
The one. They the same thing. It's just one up. We talking
not
about
quite,
that.
Not quite. Not quite. No,
because the one of them got a master bedroom.
Nah, but I mean, all of them have a master bedroom. I'm talking about yours. The one you was in, it's more. The architecture is much different.
They changed it a little bit.
It's a little traditional. A little more family style.
Yeah. But the second floor got a whole master bedroom. The one in the other one. All the rooms are individual. This one got a big, like, you know, they knocked out a wall and then combined two rooms.
And the slide.
Somebody gonna listen to this and buy it in front of y'all.
They don't know what we talking about.
They do. They talk about it.
No, they don't.
They don't go to Anguilla and be like, what's the house that Charlotte
made? They don't know what we talking about. They don't know what we talking about.
20 years.
We had a blast, man.
20 years of trap music, man. We appreciate you so much, brother.
Man, thank y'all.
No, we really got to start preserving history, man. And the 50 years of hip hop made me think about that. But, you know, just also what I saw them do with Hov, with the Book of Hov. And I just feel like there's so many false narratives online and people trying to rewrite history. It's like, yo, we really got to let people know who started what.
Absolutely.
Yeah, that's
you know,
true.
Who's the foundation of a lot of this stuff that we love in this culture called hip-hop. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's true. And how long y'all been doing? How long has Breakfast Club been in existence?
13 years.
This year. So what's y'all anniversary date?
December.
December what?
Going on 14.
December who? 21st December 21st. Yeah. Damn, right around Christmas time.
Right around Christmas time.
Yep. Okay.
Yeah. Why, you so got something in mind?
What y'all do to celebrate?
Nothing. No. Nothing. We've been thinking about some stuff, though. We want to do something called the Young OG Ball.
Yeah.
Okay. What would that consist of?
It's a bunch of people our age who get together to have some good grown folks fun. You know what I mean? Like a big party where people dress up, like really put it on.
Man, I know that this may be a little overplayed and may sound somewhat cliche, but to commemorate the Breakfast Club, I'm thinking a dope-ass brunch.
I'm with it.
That'd be dope.
Why not?
A dope-ass brunch. The Breakfast Club. Or, you know what? Hannah, she...
Luther Hannah.
Hannah had... This was before you guys. Mm-hmm. Hannah had a party that she did for me every year for my birthday. And it was basically, we'll go out, you know, and we'll do like the invitation only thing. Then we'll go to, you know, Magic City or something like that. And after that, she'll like get a presidential suite and put brunch tables in it.
Mm-hmm.
And from like 3:30 in the morning to noon, we'll have brunch. Mm-hmm. And it'll be called the Breakfast Club.
That's dope.
You know what I mean?
Hannah, let's do it.
So maybe, you know, y'all contact Hannah and see if she can, you know, reinstall the Breakfast Club.
But you know what I wanted to do too? For my car show, what I do is I recreate the room.
Okay. This room.
This room.
Okay.
With the chairs and the background and people love taking pictures. So I wanted to do something like that where people can actually come and do their own Breakfast Club thing, you know, whether they tape it or something like that. I mean, yeah, we ain't part of trap, but we would love to do like a little, maybe like a little section in the trap music. We didn't have mad trap artists on there.
I would love to have y'all. You know, they do Big Facts. Mm-hmm. They do Big Facts at the Trap Music Museum. Mm-hmm. But I think that we could find, as a matter of fact, that y'all just gave me another great idea. You own real estate. Mm-hmm. When one of those buildings you got, man, just do a podcast room. You know what I'm saying? And then dress them up however y'all mm-hmm. want to dress them up. Let folk pay y'all hourly rates, daily rates to come mm-hmm. in there. Maybe you can have some classes. You know what I'm mm-hmm. saying?
Salute to my guys, Big Facts, man.
Yeah, shout out to Big Facts.
They on the Black Effect iHeartRadio Podcast Network.
And y'all got 85 South too, right?
85 mm-hmm. South, yeah. We partnered with 85 South and Big Facts, yeah.
And you know, we are at All Def Digital, you know what I'm saying? We kind of optimize the CPNs that people get for their streams on YouTube. So, you know, we work hand in hand cohesively on a lot of things together.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, ladies and gentlemen, it's T.I.
T.I., man.
Appreciate y'all, man.
That's what's going on.
It's the Breakfast Club. Don't worry, T.I.
One more thing. Are you going to do some type of show for trap music?
Yeah. I think King is doing something, man. And so far he got Boosie and Tootie, and he's asking me to come. I'm thinking about it.
It would only make sense for you to do it.
Yes, sir, you got to think about it.
Yeah.
You got to see what the budget looks like. Music in its entirety.
I told him he got to make sure he got some insurance, man. You know what I'm saying? I can't. But, yeah, he said he wanted to kind of take over the celebration for the anniversary. And you know what I'm saying? All right, cool. So I'm going to see what he put together.
I feel like you got to perform it in its entirety somewhere.
Man, we going to see, man. But the Ha Ha Mafia will be in Philly, man, at the mm-hmm. Helium. Get your tickets right now online, wherever Helium's website is.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, catch the Ha Ha Mafia wherever you can, because it will be going down.
That's right.
You did.
It's the Breakfast Club. It's T.I.
AT&T connects an ode to podcast. Connect the alarm, change the podcast you stream. Connect the snooze, 10 more minutes to dream. Connect the shower, lather up with the news, sports talk, comedians, or movie reviews. Connect with that 3-hour philosophy show. Change the drive into work and traffic so slow. Connect the dishes to voices that glow. Thank you to the geniuses of spoken audio. Connect the stories, change your perspective. Connecting changes everything. AT&T.
What up? I am Dramos, host of the Life as a Gringo podcast. This is a show for the No Sabo kids, the 200 percenters. Here we celebrate your otherness and embrace living in the gray area. Every Tuesday, I'll be bringing you conversations around personal growth, issues affecting the Latin community, and much more. Then, every Thursday, I'll be tackling trending stories and current events from our community. Listen to Life as a Gringo on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome to Season 9 of Next Question with me, Katie Couric. I've got some big news to share with you in our season premiere featuring the one and only Kris Jenner.
Oh my gosh, congratulations. That is very, very exciting.
And that's just the beginning. We'll also be joined by podcast host Jay Shetty, Hillary Clinton, Renee Fleming, Liz Cheney, and many more. So come on in, take a break from the incessant negativity for a weekly dose of fascinating conversations. Some of them, I promise, will actually put you in a good mood. Listen to Next Question with me, Katie Couric, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Johnny B. Goode, the host of the podcast Creating a Con, the story of BitCon. This podcast dives deep into the story of Ray Trapani and his company, CentraTech. I'll explore how 320-somethings built a company out of lies, deceit, and greed.
I've been saying since a very young age that I was going to be a millionaire. If someone's like, oh, what's your best way of making money? I'm like, oh, we should start some sort of scheme.
Listen to Creating a Con, the story of BitCon, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.